Grateful to have the opportunity to spend some time talking with Leith Anderson today. Leith is the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. He served as senior pastor at Wooddale Church for 35 years and has been a leading spokesperson in what's happening in the church today for many years, written some 10 or more books, and we're happy to just spend a little time with him today to talk about the church, maybe taking a little look back. It's early on the new year, looking back at last year and looking ahead, some of the challenges. Leith, welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you, Neil. Great to be with you again.
We've passed over another year, so maybe just in terms of looking back from the your position, I guess, as president of the NAE, which is an organization with thousands of churches represented. What's your assessment of evangelicals in America?
This is a good day for evangelicals. Evangelicals represent a significant, perhaps the most significant segment of Christian faith in America. And America, unlike many of the Western industrialized countries, is a country where faith and religion are part of front page news stories and conversation every day. So evangelicals in the early part of the last century were facing some formidable challenges and finished the last century very well and began this century strong.
There's just a report out about the growth of megachurches, some over 1,600 megachurches in the country, over 5 million attending each weekend for worship, and yet I guess we know that the majority are in churches with 100 or less. So is there a kind of a growing disparity there?
Yeah, well, if we want to get into statistics, actually, I think that you could say the majority of churches are 100 or less, but not the majority of people. Probably the majority of people are in the top 14% of churches in the United States today. There are about 400,000 churches in the country, give or take. And the median-sized church is 75 at worship on Sunday morning. I sometimes tell pastors, if you're in a church of 76, you are in one of the largest churches in America. And, you know, statistically, that is actually true. But if you can take a little more statistics, sometimes people will say, well, I'm in a smaller church. And I say, well, what size is your church? And they say, well, we have about 250 on Sunday morning. And I remind them that that is the 95th percentile. A church of 250 is in the top 5% of all churches in the United States. So most churches are not large in attendance. And while megachurches get a lot of visibility, and rightly so, they have a lot of influence, that's not the whole picture. Different people are in different contexts.
But they certainly – do they drive what happens in some of these major churches? Do they drive a lot of what maybe is changing or maybe new trends in Christianity in America?
Well, they often have the resources to be able to experiment in ways that others can't experiment. And experiments, when you don't have a lot of resources, can take you down. If you have larger resources, then you can probably survive if it wasn't the wisest choice of all. But – you know, there are people who like small churches. There are many places where small churches are appropriate. It is true that churches of less than 500 are facing some stronger challenges than in the past, and churches that average over 500 tend to do better right now. But, you know, we can't have the whole picture based upon just a statistic. Most of us, you know, we're familiar with our own church and our own context and our own community, and that's where we're spiritually fed, and that's what we want.
Maybe it brings up the question, I guess, about measurement. Is size the only thing that really matters when we're measuring the strength of a church?
Oh, no. There are wonderful churches that have smaller numbers, and there are some churches that have some serious problems that have larger numbers. So just as you can't say that somebody is healthy because they're 7 feet tall or they're not healthy because they're 5 feet tall, that's just sheer silliness. And church health is really much more important than the statistics.
Talk a little bit about mega churches. I know it's one of the things that seems to be happening more is the multi-site church. And I know you pastored a church for many years that planted the churches. What are you seeing maybe in terms of planting churches versus maybe multi-site? Are things changing in that respect?
There are more multi-site churches. I don't know exactly what's going to happen with that. My best guess is that if you give a generation, they will become separate entities. We have thousands of years of precedent in that. And this has been a generation of astonishing church planting in America. I mean, I think back, because I'm old enough to think back 30 years, and denominations weren't starting new churches. And I can just tell you that the denominations and groups that are going to be strong 25 years from now are the ones that are starting new churches today. And the great churches in America 25 years from now are churches you've never heard of because they haven't started yet. And as someone who travels a lot across this country and enjoys getting off the interstate with a rental car and going into small communities, I can tell you that virtually every school, every theater has a new church. So new churches are just cropping up everywhere. It's amazing. And they're almost all evangelical churches.
Which, I guess you mentioned denominations. I mean, we've seen that trend for some time that maybe denominational connection not as important. Mainline church has been sort of decreasing. What do you see there?
Well, mainline churches have been declining in numbers, not necessarily in number of congregations, although that's probably coming with some aging of constituency, whereas evangelicals have done very well and have been growing. And probably 80% of the megachurches in America belong to a denomination. You may not know it. So you may not know that Saddleback is a Southern Baptist church, but in fact it is. And you may not know that Redeemer Church in Manhattan is a Presbyterian Church of America church, but it is. And so it is across the nation that many of the churches that are significant and influential are denominational churches.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about maybe just in general challenges for the church in a secular society today. Is it greater than it was a generation ago? I mean, you pastored for one church for 35 years, so you've seen a lot of change and growth. But how would you assess where we are today, maybe in some of those cultural challenges?
We certainly have cultural challenges, and we certainly have political challenges. One of the roles of the National Association of Evangelicals is that our headquarters are in Washington, D.C., and that's where my office is. And we're engaged significantly in court cases, in involvement with the administration and the Congress. So, yeah, those things have high visibility. But the church has always struggled with cultural challenges. Sometimes people will tell me, we live in an extremely difficult age. And I say, well, that's true. And I say to them, do you realize that heroin and syringes were sold in the Sears Roebuck catalog and delivered through the United States Postal Service in 1900? That predates the prescription laws that we have today? So some of the challenges that we have with drugs are not as great as they were. Or that the per capita consumption of alcohol in America is dramatically less now than it was before the prohibition. And that's not to underestimate the problem with drunk driving and alcoholism, but it is to say that we need to be aware of what has happened over the longer course of time, and we are not the only generation of history. We can learn a lot from what has happened in the past. Yeah, you know, I watched a two-segment show on the History Channel on Pompeii, and I've actually visited Pompeii a couple of times, and the gross immorality, the astonishing sexual misbehavior in Pompeii, which is all documented because it was destroyed by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. And while I grieve immorality in America and some of the things that we are facing, I compare it to what they describe in Pompeii, and we don't have the problems they had. And yet the church flourished in the time of Pompeii in the first and second and third centuries because they were central to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And as we are centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ, that is far more important than the cultural challenges. And I've been talking on and on. So, Neil, what do you want to talk about next?
You know, just to follow up on that, are you seeing evidence of flourishing where churches are sort of most true to the core elements of the gospel? Is that what really seems to be attractive today? I mean, we hear a lot about, you know, it's social engagement, those things. But what are you seeing that's attractive in the church today?
Well, recently Pope Francis was talking about many of the social issues, and he had an interesting statement. I wish I could quote him verbatim, but he was saying essentially that many of the issues that the Catholic Church has confronted, which I think they have rightfully confronted in the broader culture, are really important, but what is most important is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And he absolutely got that right. What is most important is the gospel of Jesus Christ. So churches that center on the gospel rather than on many of these other issues or their own internal identity are the ones that are on the right track. But, Neil, let me also say that God is astonishing in the way he chooses for his Holy Spirit to bless churches and Christians. So I see examples of those that do things that, in my estimation, are crazy wrong. And God, in his grace and sovereignty, says, this is a vehicle that I'm going to use. And we see that in the New Testament. There were people that did strange stuff, and God blessed and strengthened the church anyway. And that's our hope and our encouragement, that this is about Jesus Christ. It's really not about our denomination or size of church or pastoral style or all the things that we count often to be far more important than maybe they really are.
Remember one of your, one of your first books talking about churches and change, and something about, you know, many church leaders would like to wake up and believe it was 1950 again. Do you think that's still the case today, or have we moved into the 21st century, most of the church?
I think so. Well, churches are slow to change, and actually that's probably a good thing, because they're maybe less likely to run with fads, and we are all tempted to do that. There's such diversity. There are actually some people who, in the name of being contemporary, are doing things that were done in 1950. They just weren't around in 1950 to know that what they are doing is actually going back in time in the way they do it. And it's fine. What needs to happen in every church is we need to understand what is the culture of that community, and then how do we communicate Jesus Christ in that particular culture. Well, one of the comparisons I sometimes make with people is when someone is a Muslim, their holy book is the Quran. And if you're a really devout Muslim, then you learn Arabic because that's the true Quran, not a translation. Christianity is quite the opposite. The Bible was written in Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek. What we do is not focus on having everybody go and learn that language. We take the original languages and translate it into the language of the people. And that's what we need to be doing, is saying what is happening in our world, our country, our culture. We need to understand that. We need to read that. But then we need to continually translate the message of the Bible into what is the contemporary culture so that people understand it. And that needs to be in the life of the church, but also in our individual Christian lives.
I've noticed, and maybe you have as well, or maybe just seems new, that it seems like there's a greater emphasis or discussion than in terms of language. We talk about being followers of Jesus, that, you know, it's not so much about, it's not born again anymore. We maybe don't even use the word Christian so much. It's followers. Is that kind of language making a difference or helping us refocus on the central point of the gospel?
Well, I think it's helpful with some people, but it's different with others. So some people will be referring to being disciples or followers of Jesus or Christ followers or being saved. There's lots of different terms, and most of those are biblical terms, so they're okay terms, as long as we're not compromising the central message and the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. If we are doing it because we are embarrassed to be Christians or we don't like what the gospel has to say, I say that's wrong.
Leith Anderson is our guest. He's president of the National Association of Evangelicals and served as a senior pastor of Wooddale Church for 35 years and has written a number of books, and we're happy to have him in studio today as we talk a little bit about the church looking back and looking ahead. Leith, you mentioned that as NAE president, you have your offices in Washington, D.C., and so there's opportunities to interact with leadership and government. Give us a little sense of maybe what some of the challenges are there. We've heard talk about, you know, there's this sort of emphasis on freedom of worship versus freedom of religion, that is public expression of religion becoming marginalized. Where do you see the issues there?
There are some risks that we are now facing. We do need to understand that if you travel to other Western countries, if you go to Australia or Canada or UK or Europe, you will find that Christian faith in particular, but religion in general, is not much in the public conversation, nothing like it is in the United States. And when you pick up newspapers or watch television, it is astonishing how frequently matters of faith, and particularly Christian faith, are woven into our society. So that is really good. On the other hand, there are some sad challenges. A good example of this currently is the government's, what's called the HHS, Health and Human Services, mandate on contraception, that it be included in all health insurance policies. And there are different views on contraception, and Protestants and Catholics have a different belief concerning that. But to say that the government can impose a regulation that controls your religious belief behavior, and you're fined if you don't cooperate with that, that's putting religious liberty at risk. And I'm grateful for the Green family and Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Woods in Pennsylvania. Their case has been accepted by the United States Supreme Court. And I certainly hope that the Supreme Court rules that the most important issue here is our religious freedom issue, not some government mandate.
We hear a great deal about persecution, religious persecution around the world. Are those issues that come up in the offices of NAE in terms of what's happening in our country? Or is persecution not – it doesn't really qualify at that level? Or?
We don't have persecution the way Christians are persecuted in the Middle East, and that is a center of persecution right now, because we have had these dictators in the Middle East, and they have done some atrocities, but many of them have actually protected religious minorities, including Christians. And with the Arab Spring and some other things that have happened, it has actually significantly increased persecution of churches and believers. And that really breaks my heart, because we're talking about places where the Christian community goes back 2,000 years. And countries like Iraq have hundreds of thousands fewer Christians now than they did 20 years ago.
Is there a place, a role that, is your leadership at NAE? I mean, are there ways that we can bring some effort, some attention to bear to this issue and make a difference?
Well, for example, on the 18th of December, at the end of 2013, the NAE and others had a day of prayer for those in Syria. 100,000 people have died in Syria, and Christians have been deeply hurt. Many have died. So I would put prayer at the top of the list. In terms of the political side, I would keep prayer at the top of the list on the political side as well. But we need to continually encourage our government to be seeking protection for those who are persecuted, and those are minorities. And it's not just Christians, it's other religions as well, that they not have to suffer because of that. And for example, I was a year ago in Geneva as part of a U.S. delegation, the United Nations High Commission on Refugees, and that the UN protect people's religious beliefs in refugee camps. And we met with ambassadors from around the world. It's those types of things that we need to be advocating for and praying for, because it's a tough day for a lot of believers in Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You mentioned here in America, U.S., it seems like there is religion is still part of the conversation, although maybe not as much as it used to be. There is a recent Gallup poll, the Honesty and Ethics poll, and the clergy dropped a few points. I wonder if are we always sort of looking for bad news? And maybe what's your sense of the general public perception of clergy and media in general? Do they look at a church and say this is a value to the community, or has that changed?
There are certainly clergy that are ethical and unethical. I think the probably good news is clergy are getting a higher rating than the Congress is currently getting. But, there's a lot of ratings that are higher than the Congress. I'm always saddened by ethical breaches and misbehavior among those who are pastors. I don't think it's particularly different than it has ever been, and I don't think it's particularly different from other professions. What we need to do is continually be called back to a high biblical standard, and we need to be honest, we need to be moral, we need to be ethical, and the church has a responsibility to give supervision to clergy to make sure that that happens, and there should be discipline when it doesn't happen. However, I remember one time I had, I think it was Fox News, cameras in front of me, and they were asking me about the moral failure of a well-known pastor. And I said to them, there are about 450,000 pastors in the United States, and one of them has misbehaved. So let's talk about the other 499,999. And after we've talked about them, I'd be glad to talk to you about this particular person.
It does seem like there's always issues about doctrinal purity and some of those things. I don't know if NAE, gets involved in those kinds of discussions, but, the church has, over the course of its life, has always sort of wrestled with, what is it that we believe? What do we hold dear? Do you see some of those issues on the forefront, or not so much this year?
I don't know that I'm seeing any fresh wave of doctrinal controversy within the churches of the United States. Evangelical churches certainly have differences in beliefs about mode of baptism, or their Arminian or Calvinist. But when it comes down to the central gospel of Jesus Christ, when it comes down to, I do a monthly survey of evangelical leaders, and a year or two ago I asked the question, is there any other way to salvation other than through Jesus Christ? I think it is the only time we have had 100%, every single person that was surveyed said that Jesus Christ is the only way of salvation to salvation. So yes, there are always going to be a variety of differences. There were in the New Testament. There's nothing new to that. But when it comes down to core beliefs in the authority and trustworthiness of the Bible, in the doctrine of the Trinity, in Jesus Christ being the Son of God, our Savior, that He rose again from the dead, that He is the way of salvation, there is unanimity.
One of the areas that we've heard a lot about is the relationship between millennials and the church. You know, Barna and many others have done studies. You know, they're leaving the church. But I don't know, what are you finding? What's your sense of maybe just what millennials' influence and impact in the church will be in the years to come?
When I talk to pastors, and I'm more likely now to talk to denominational leaders and people that are seeing the broad picture, they are extremely encouraged about millennials and young adults in general. There are surveys that, and anecdotal stories, some of them hypothetical, that talk about those young adults leaving the church. I think that that is not in fact true, nor is it the reality. Probably the gold standard for research in the United States is the General Social Survey. It's a secular survey. It's much more thorough than any of these others that you have mentioned. And it actually, and it is very broad, and it actually shows an increase in church engagement, not significant, but an increase among millennials and young adults. So the trend, while slight, is for greater engagement of younger people, not lesser engagement. There are generational characteristics, and that has always been the case. And my education is in sociology, so I have a tendency to look at that. However, there also are changes within generations. You know, I remember talking to one of our sons when he was a teenager, and he said, you know, Dad, in the future, there aren't going to be any early church services. They're not going to be at 8:30, 9:30 in the morning. He said, they'll all be gone when my generation takes over. And I said to him, you know, let me just say that when you are married and have children and they come and bounce on your bed at 5:30 in the morning, you are going to be anxious to get up and go to an early service with an early Sunday school. He didn't see it that way then, but you see it differently at a different time in life. And so some of it is generational characteristics that continue through the generation, and others of them change as we go along. When I talk to denominational leaders, I often ask the question, is your denomination growing? Are your churches growing? And with very few exceptions, the answer is always yes, sometimes stunningly growing. And then I say to them, all right, tell me about the growth that is among immigrants and the growth that is among native-born Americans. And usually the answer tilts toward not much, if any, growth among native-born Caucasian, suburban type people, but among immigrants, it's huge. So the growing edge of evangelicalism in America is clearly immigrants that have come to this country. And we are in a period where there's been significant immigration, and much of our immigration has come from Christian countries or countries where the gospel is advancing rapidly, just huge revivals that are taking place. So much of that spiritual vigor and renewal is coming from Latin American countries and China and other places around the world. And I think 100 years from now, historians are going to look back and they're going to say the beginning of the 21st century, the great blessing that God gave to the evangelical churches of America was our immigrants.
Amazing. Well, Leith, we'll wrap up our time and just give you an opportunity maybe to say, you know, what you're maybe most excited about or optimistic about. I mean, God is still at work. What's as you look ahead, what encourages you the most?
I am just overwhelmed and delighted with what God is doing around the world. And while the National Association of Evangelicals focuses primarily on America, the reality is that we live at a time unlike any other time in history before. I sometimes tell people that you've heard pastors say, when I get to heaven, I'm going to go and talk to Peter and Paul and Andrew and James and say, what was it like? I'm going to get in line and ask them, what was it like in the first century when God was doing his great thing? I think it may be the other way around. I think that Peter and James and Paul and all of those may be lining up to talk to you and me, saying, what was it like at the beginning of the 21st century when God did his greatest thing for the Church of Jesus Christ around the globe? And then they're going to say, and what was your part? What was your part in this great day for the church and for the gospel? And I hope we have a good answer, that we recognize what the Holy Spirit was doing and that we shared in this great blessing of God.
And maybe that's the challenge, right, that all of us, we all have a part to play. Right?
We do. And our part is not primarily to find out what's wrong. It's primarily to see where God is blessing.
Yeah. And get in step with him there. Leith Anderson, president of the National Association of Evangelicals, giving us an update today. Leith, blessings to you. Thanks so much for what you're doing and for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Neil.